Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Big moments or small moments, they all deserve great style.
Our over 800 stylists are here to help you look and feel your best. Visit your local Marisa's to find fashion fit for you with a little help from us.
Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky. But Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 45% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions apply.
14 now on this Thursday morning, September the 18th, and no cold fronts in sight. You heard Peyton Malone say that, but hurricane season is quiet, so if you can do that old math thing about greater than or whatever, I think a quiet hurricane season is greater than no cold front. So we'll take it, and you look at the map from the National Weather Service, and there's nothing really out there. There's one little thing that's developing, but it's expected because of that Bermuda high or Azor high we spoke about yesterday with Barry Keim, expected to go up into the Atlantic, and no concern for us at all. So we got the all clear for 7 to 10 days, so we're going to enjoy that. We're getting ready to talk about the meeting of the Fed yesterday. They decided to cut interest rates slightly, but that's not necessarily what President Trump wanted. And there's a political aspect to this as well, in that the Fed, the people that have agreed with President Trump before and disagreed with Chair Powell, they didn't necessarily fall in line. Only one person dissented. That was a new appointee that the Senate rapidly approved along party lines to the board that Trump appointed. Chair Powell noted that the inflation still above the Fed's 2% target, while unemployment has also risen. And it's not clear what steps the Fed should take. If it cuts the rates too much, it could overstimulate the economy and accelerate inflation. If it keeps its rates too high, an ongoing slowdown could get worse. So I would not want to be the one to make that call. And we're waiting to talk to somebody from Bankrate to see what they think about it. I know they've already shared some thoughts with us, and we'll talk about that, that the Federal Reserve cut interest rates by a quarter point. I don't know what effect that's going to have on the economy. They noted that risks to unemployment, as I said, have risen, and therefore the cut is warranted to support the labor market and rebalance the policy rate in light of the shifting dynamics of economic risk. The worry here is that they cut it too much, then inflation kicks up and also joblessness goes up, which means we're back to stagflation, which is a situation that they had in the 70s and the 80s with 13.5% interest rates and crazy inflation, and it was not good for anybody. So let's hope we don't get to that. It's 6:16. Let's see if we can take an early break here, and then when we come back, we'll talk more about the economy and inflation and see what's going on with our guest on WWL. All right, 6:23 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL. We'll talk with Bankrate at some point, I'm sure, about the economy. Right now we're joined by Tyler Stanfield, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service. How you doing, Tyler?
Doing pretty well. How are you?
I'm okay, sir. So tropics quiet next 7 to 10 days, safe to say?
Yeah, we have a clean bill of health in terms of the tropics right now. No disturbances that are expected to move into the Gulf anytime soon. We obviously are tracking the systems way out in the Atlantic. Gabrielle is the main system that the Hurricane Center is watching, but fortunately that system is expected to stay well out to sea, and so it's definitely some good news so far as we kind of tail into the end of September here.
So as it relates to cold front and Bermuda high and the tilting of the sun, or as we get to the autumnal equinox, tell me what's going to happen with cold fronts and high pressure and pushing hurricanes away. Because I know they talked about La Nina, but maybe forming a 40% chance for that. But I was always under the impression that as we got to October and the angle of the sun changed and the waters cooled off, or maybe we got more cold fronts coming in, that perhaps that would make us immune to hurricanes so we could breathe a sigh of relief after October. Am I making all of that up in my head or not?
I would say there is.
And I do make stuff up in my head occasionally. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah, there's definitely some truth to it in terms of cold fronts kind of providing a way to, you know, push down dry air and keep systems at bay. However, definitely the system, the season as it stands right now, I mean, we do have a pattern that's been pretty favorable for us the last, favorable in terms of keeping storms away for the last month or so, and more fall-like and drier in a way. But really all it takes is this pattern flipping for 1 week, and that can completely change the script on us. So really the main thing right now is just, I mean, we have up hurricane season extending all the way through October and into early November, especially for here locally. So obviously keep an eye on things. It's been a pretty overall, I guess I wouldn't love to say the key word quiet, but quiet season overall. And fortunately that's the case, but it can obviously change on a dime even into October for us. So that's been kind of the main thing that we're keeping an eye on, is just obviously, especially as we get into late season, we'll start to see more homegrown systems again. And so that's going to be something to keep an eye on for us.
Wait, what do you mean homegrown systems?
Well, when we say homegrown, it just means systems that form in the Caribbean or Gulf, basically not way out near Africa, like the current systems that we're watching.
So what is behind the current system that we're watching, and what's the deal with Saharan dust? Is that still in our favor?
The system out there right now is expected to stay out to sea. It's a fairly large system, but expected to stay way out there. And that's pretty typical for the September time of year. Saharan dust has been actually pretty manageable. It's just been a very unfavorable environment for wind shear and dry air out there compared to normal. So that's been the main thing that's kind of been keeping these systems in check for the most part.
But we can say the next 7 to 10 days is good, right?
Yes. We have the Tropical Weather Outlook does not have any systems that will be impacting our local area, at least for the next 7 days.
So that would take us almost to the, you know, not quite the end of September, but close to the second to last week of September. I'm just trying to take it a week at a time. What about cold fronts? Somebody texted in about the possibility of any cold fronts coming in soon or anything to at least get us out of the near 90s,
right?
Something like low 80s for a high or something like that?
Unfortunately, the long-term pattern for at least the next week or so is going to still favor above normal temperatures, expected to be in the low to mid-90s. But as we get into that latter part of the month, we could see another shot of cold air. It's really too far out in terms of the consistency in the forecast right now to really be confident in a cool down. But obviously, as we get out of September and into October, we should see more frequent frontal passages to kind of get us out of this more summer-like temperature.
So how soon ahead of time do you know that they got a cold front coming? Are you looking at stuff up around British Columbia and the Arctic Circle and all of that, or how far do you track it? Where do these things start, the cold fronts?
Yeah, the majority of systems that we track that bring fronts down this way are going to come from Canada usually. We'll see systems all the way up in British Columbia and Alberta, and we'll be able to kind of track their progress. Usually the computer models are pretty, they're dependable in terms of within that like 5 day range, but really we have to get that system to be over Canada by that point. By the time the system's over North America, that's when we can really start to increase our confidence in, you know, seeing those colder air masses getting all the way down here. So especially as we get into winter, we should start to see more and more of those cold fronts actually make it all the way through our area and cool us down.
Do more things have to fall into place to keep a hurricane away from us or to have a cold front come toward us?
Do you mind rephrasing that?
Well, I'm just wondering if in terms of convergence of events, does it take more things to happen for a cold front to reach us in full strength, or does it take more things to happen to keep a hurricane away from us?
Oh, that's a good question. I would probably say there's probably more needed to keep a hurricane, out in terms of this time of year than it is mm-hmm. for a cold front. Cold fronts are definitely much more, they'll swing down and usually stall right around the southeast this time of year. But it's, I guess, kind of in both facets, there's different things that kind of are pulling each system back and forth. It's a tug of war kind of in a way.
Well, I made a math equation earlier, and I still think that quiet hurricane season is greater than no cold fronts. I'll go with that.
Yeah, I would definitely agree there.
Thank you, Tyler. Appreciate it. Tyler Stanfield, National Weather Service meteorologist. We'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Mike Strain, as we do every Thursday morning. Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. We always learn something when we talk to him, and I'm sure today will be no exception. Right now, we pause for WWL First News. 6:44, 16 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Mike Strain, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. How you doing, Mike?
Man, I am doing great. I am in Rogers, Arkansas. I've been here since Sunday for a meeting of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture, the Southern Association, and the Southern United Trade Association. Today we're headed back to Louisiana, and I'll be back in the office tomorrow. A lot of good things going on, but, you know, it really works when you get together with all of your peers and your federal counterparts, and you spend several days together working on problems, sitting down at the table. And so, you know, we've had a lot nice long sit down with Secretary Rollins. That's right before she went and caught a plane and went with the president to England. You know, our counterparts from the British embassy that I've traveled with several times are here, and we've been working again, you know, with them. We also yesterday we went to Walmart headquarters in Tyson Foods, and I had a very good and strong conversation with John Tyson, chairman of the board, about Tyson Foods, and talked to them about the poultry industry and why they're not in Louisiana. And so we had a very good discussion, and I explained the opportunities because they're looking at expansion. And I said, look, the Florida Parish is ready for poultry. We have everything there, and come on and take a look. So we're doing a little business development, but we're also working on many issues. Yesterday, we had an hour and a half sit down with the Food and Drug Administration because, you know, 40% of what the FDA does is actually administered through the Departments of Ag and Forestry across the United States, same way with the EPA and all the other entities. So it was a very good meeting and working together, looking at what the issues are and then how we find solutions.
What are the problems farmers are facing now, Mike? Because I see a story here that says a reporter asking if the only short-term solution, quoting a farmer, is for the government to send him a check. And Secretary Rollins said that assistance is likely part of what USDA is preparing to roll out in the coming weeks. Why do they need the assistance, and what would that look like?
So what's going on now, and we outlined, and she outlined, and she reiterated exactly what we are telling her. She's very cognizant. Number one is the low price of commodities, as they have been low prices for several years. Number two has been the great amount of inflation in input costs. As commodity prices have remained stagnant over the last 4 or 5 years and actually went down this year, input costs, you know, the cost to produce the crop has risen dramatically. For instance, labor in the last 5 years is up 47%. Seed cost up 18%. Fertilizer up 27%. All of these things, that and interest rates as high as they are. And so when you add the input cost, you know, that's number two right behind the low commodity prices. And then number three, interest rates, which are a tremendous issue. That's one of the biggest costs now for farmers. And, of course, then the next issue is, again, getting these trade deals done. And because we are losing market share, we've lost market share. We're losing market share in Mexico, for instance, to rice right now because Brazil is dumping rice on the Mexican market, and the Brazilian government is in the back door supporting their rice growers, and then they're dumping their rice into the Mexican market, but also the fact that China is closing its door to our soybeans. So we got to get all these trade treaties in place. And then finally, and it's not something that she discussed, but I'll discuss it, is that the devaluation of foreign currencies compared to the United States dollar. Mm-hmm. We sell in dollars, we buy in foreign currency. All these things together, and the fact that the farmers have kept going. And now we have a record crop in the United States, a record corn crop, record crops, low commodity prices, and difficulty moving them. So you put all those things together, it becomes the perfect storm for financial stress like we saw back in the 80s, in the 1980s that we saw. And so a number of things. One, if you look in 2015, monies were made available during the first round of the tariffs when all that started to the Commodity Credit Corporation, and it was money that was collected from tariffs. Now, that was the plan, to have another round of monies to help compensate the farmers over and above their crop insurance, because you can buy crop insurance called PLC, payment price loss coverage. There is a crop insurance. But above that, the monies would come from the Commodity Credit Corporation. Now we're waiting on the Supreme Court to rule or to give a little finality on whether or not the president has the ability to levy these tariffs. Because again, looking at Section 8 of of the Constitution, so that may be on hold as we look for other options. Now there will be other bills that are going to be filed probably today or on Monday, looking at other mechanisms to try to find some immediate funds for farmers. Right now, it's estimated across the United States only 5% of America's farmers will be, quote, profitable. And so we have to take a look at this. But it's not only the farmer. I spoke to a rice farmer and, exporter from the town of around Elton, Louisiana. And in Elton, the police department, most six members have been laid off. They've laid off 24 teachers, because what happens, every dollar that farmer gets, they're going to spend in that community. And so in some communities, the only economy is the farm economy, and Elton is rice. And so when you start looking at that, I wouldn't call it the ripple effect. I just call it the combined effect of everything on low commodity prices actually has to do with the entire economy of parishes and entire regions.
Why is China closing the door on soybeans, Mike?
Because China's the world's largest importer of soybeans. Mm-hmm. That is the way that, if we tell them that you're not going to, take technology from our microchips or whatever it is, they say, okay, we just won't buy soybeans. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing that they do. It's not that they don't need them, because they need them desperately, because China cannot feed its own people. They're the largest importer of everything in the world. And so they do that. That is their main tool that they will fight back at the United States on anything that we do with economics or with tariffs that they don't like. The first thing they do is say, we're not going to buy any soybeans. Second is corn. So we have to find other markets until that trade is reestablished.
Where is China getting the soybeans from now?
Brazil. Okay. Mostly from Brazil. So Brazil, and Brazil has been continuously cutting down more rainforest. And, what you hear about that is true. But they've only got about 35 million more acres that they can go ahead and put into production. But they're doing that at the expense of beef production, too. So, there's not a lot more rainforest that they can farm. And they're converting their agricultural land that has been for beef into crops. Now, the fertility there is only going to last 3 or 4 years. That soil is not fertile, and it rapidly is depletes its fertility. That's why they're always looking for more land. But they are a major player. The United States is still the largest exporter of food in the world. We are the true breadbasket of the world. But Brazil is coming on very strong. They're big in sugar. And the other thing is that the weather in Brazil allows them to have two soybean crops or two corn crops per year, because they're right there on the equator. So we have to keep our eyes on Brazil, but they are becoming major players in the markets.
But is that a short-term 3 to 4 year thing because of the soil?
It is, but they keep they keep again going in after more rainforest, or they have to start looking for other soils. They're continuing to march on, but their soils are not that fertile, especially when they take the rainforest. So it can be short, and I think it's going to level out. That's why we estimate that they're only going to be able to add about another 35 million acres, and then that's where they're going to be, and then they're going to have to start farming, you know, by using large amounts of fertilizer and inputs. The other markets we're looking at specifically is India. India is growing, and their economy is going to grow, and their number of people is going to outpace that of China, and it is outpacing China. So that's a new market we're looking at, and they're very hungry. There's the thing about in India, the average farm size is 2.7 acres, very small, subsistence farming, and they need everything. But the other thing that we're doing, we're markedly increasing our work as far as finding new markets through our national organization and through the foreign service that we do here, through the Foreign Ag Service. So that we'll be doing a lot more trade missions, and we are working on that. And again, I met with, our counterparts there with the British Embassy and talked to them more about moving chicken and rice, selling that into England and into Ireland and Northern Ireland, and said, look, we are ready to move some products. And so everywhere we go, we are collectively, all of us, all of the ag commissioners, and there are many trade missions going on simultaneously, and we go and we're doing as many as we can. We're all moving to move products and looking at new markets. That's the whole thing. We need to diversify our markets and not try to, quote, put all of our eggs in one big basket. Mm.
Along those lines, tell me about prices in the United States quickly before we got to go with beef and chicken and eggs.
Well, so the eggs have come down a little bit, and if you look at chicken's very stable, and of course, Tyson, we were there, and that's their big deal. But now beef continues to rise. Beef is, if you look at the price of a calf going into the feedlot, you can be at $2,400 to $2,500 for that animal going in, $3.53, $3.63 going into the feedlot. We're going to see record high prices for beef for a number of reasons. Number one, these high prices, people are selling the females. We're having less numbers. Two, the issue with Mexico and the screwworms and that disease, that is an ongoing problem. We had a lot of discussion about that. So beef prices will continue to be high probably for another 3 to 5 years. That's the cycle. We may get a little relief if we allow some Mexican beef in. Poultry is going to be fairly stable. The biggest thing about poultry is the price of corn and beans, and corn and beans are inexpensive. That's holding poultry prices down, and pork's going to be somewhere in the middle. But the price of protein, poultry, pork, then beef.
We learn some stuff from you every Thursday, Mike. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Take care.
You bet. Mike Strain, Commissioner of Agriculture and Forestry, also Dr. Mike Strain, a respected veterinarian on the North Shore. It is 6:56, 4 till 7, traffic, WWL. All right, 7:16 now on this Thursday morning. We're getting ready to talk to Dr. Corey Hebert about what's going on in the country with vaccines, both for measles and COVID and et cetera, et cetera. And as soon as we connect with him, we'll put him on. I would ask you at 504-260-1870, do you get COVID vaccines or not? Do you get flu shots or not? I do. I've never had a problem with them. Whatever I can get to keep me from getting sick, keep me on the field, that's what I do, because it does me no good if I can't be on the field, right? If you can't work, if you can't function, you're not doing anybody any good, so I take the risk of getting sick. That's the way I look at it. I also try to take a very scientifically based approach when it comes to vaccines, and I have already caught myself in a position of, and I think that's what's going on with vaccines in this country, of people sometimes are thinking, well, we don't need vaccines, and that's because we've been taking vaccines. With that, we welcome in Dr. Corey Hebert, Associate Professor of Pediatrics at LSU Health New Orleans School of Medicine. How you doing, Dr. Corey?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am okay, sir. Tell me your qualifications just first off, right off the bat. Tell me what made you a doctor. What did you have to go through?
Just about 4 years of undergrad, 4 years of college, 4 years of residency, and about 29 years of practicing every day, taking care of thousands and thousands in the ER as well as direct patient care.
And I believe, Doc, you do some research as well, don't you?
Yeah, funny you should mention that. I just came back from the global launch of a new vaccine that was held up several months by the current CDC administration. We just did the world launch yesterday for a new pentavalent meningococcal vaccine that really is groundbreaking in technology.
Do they have people in areas of the world that are clamoring for vaccines, that are begging for vaccines, they can't get them, they wish they'd get their kids vaccinated, while here in the United States we have people that are just eschewing vaccines and, you don't need that?
Yeah, and the thing is that we have known this for a while. We know that we live in a country that is at the highest of scientific research when it comes to being able to have the best modalities, the most stringent programs for informed consent, meaning that, you know, the people that are in clinical trials are healthy and willing and wanting to do these clinical trials. Other countries just don't have that. And so when we start looking at the disease rates of things like tetanus and measles and whooping cough and all these types of things, you know, when I travel across the world and do medical missions and I tell people that there are anti-vaxxers in this country, they don't even believe me because they're still dying of those types of things. Remember, when we were walking through the waters after Hurricane Katrina, I remember everybody had to have a tetanus shot before they came back into the city because some of our beloved icons and people that were wading through that water got cut and died from tetanus. So it kind of, you know, people have to recognize that this is a very real thing. And people that don't know their history are doomed to repeat it. The reason why we have a luxury in this country right now to not have to be anti-vaxxers is because we don't know the real scourge of illness. And the first time we have had that whole big, you know, issue with sickness throughout the United States was COVID. And it was the first time that we had the internet, when we had one of these really big pandemics, and it was just full of misinformation, just full of it.
When it comes to measles vaccine and autism, we had a lady on, we spent an hour talking about a doctor talking about autism last Thursday, I think it was. My memory serves me right. I'm not quite sure about that. Maybe Friday. But she unequivocally said that the autism has in no way been linked to the measles vaccine. Could you just say that again, please, to reiterate that?
Yes. And see, the thing is, a lot of times people think that when you work with the CDC or doing clinical trials that you're automatically just not telling the truth. I'm not sure when that came about, that whole big flip. But we know for a fact that Dr. Wakefield, who the only person that ever said that, the only person, it has been debunked, his medical license was taken, and the conspiracy theorists will say, well, that's because he was telling the truth. But he even said that he did not tell the truth. You see what I'm saying? So that there is no link. Now, I'm going to give you something that's a cautionary tale that nobody would think that I was that I would be on his side, because after yesterday I was very appalled by the things that were happening at the CDC at the highest level from RFK Jr. But this whole concept that Tylenol could be linked to autism, rather, I'm not 100% against that. Mm. See, the issue is, the reason why is because we don't know. We don't know if Tylenol is linked, but let me be clear here. There's some studies that came out that said that Tylenol could be linked to ADHD and autism if the mother took it when the child was in utero. Now, the issue with that is that we don't know if that's true or not. So I'm not against that because I don't have the data.
You're not against investigating it.
That's right. But yeah. I am against autism being caused by vaccines because we did do the data, and that is not true. See, I can't say something's not true until I see the data, and that's what people need to see on their end. They can't say that something's not true because they can't see the data, and the reason why they can't see it is because they don't understand the data. They can see it all they want, but if they don't understand p-value, they don't understand selective bias, they don't understand one-way analysis of variance, they don't understand confidence intervals, if they don't know what those words mean, then they can't look at a study and say they did their own research because they don't know a real study when they see one because they can't pick out the real stuff versus the fake stuff.
See, I'm glad you said that because just because RFK Jr. says something, it doesn't make it wrong just because it was coming from him. It could be right, but just because he says something coming from him, it doesn't make it right either. You have to evaluate each statement on its own merits. Tell me what's going on with the CDC's vaccine advisors meeting today and tomorrow.
Yes, so this is something, this is real world for me because, as I mentioned, we had that launch of the meningococcal vaccine. This is a vaccine that if you don't get this vaccine and you go to college, and a lot of people, even high school, but a lot of people carry this bacteria, Neisseria meningitidis, they carry that in their nasal pharynx, in their nose, and most people won't get the disease. But if you happen to get that disease, and that's from kissing and coughing, sharing utensils, sharing vapes and all this types of stuff. If you
drinking
get
out to each other?
Yeah. If you get that.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist,
an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at brag-worthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
Your life isn't one size fits all. Every day brings something different. Your style should too.
At Maurices, we make it easy to show up feeling comfortable, confident, and completely you. Our over 800 stylists are here to help you look your best. From tried and true denim to head-turning looks, we've got styles that fit your life and your budget. Fashion made for real-life moments. Maurices.
Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky. But Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 45% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
That disease, you're going to probably die, right? And that's spread across the country. And we have a new vaccine that entails all of the serotypes. That vaccine was up to be signed at the level of the CDC, and they pushed off the ACIP meeting, which is the group that decides whether we will give the vaccine or not. They pushed it off and pushed it off. Nobody would sign it, and we did not have a chance to give that vaccine for the new college students coming in, which means they are at risk just because that the RFK regime and the ACIP did not want to sign it, even though it had already been through all the clinical trials, but they eventually signed it, and we just launched it after the whole issue, after school started. So we missed an opportunity for people to be protected. Right now, he got rid of all the folks on the CDC's board for vaccines. There are no folks that have been there for a long time. There are no real scientists. It's just political appointees. So right now, it's a very scary time for us when we start looking at our public health. Very scary time.
How quickly do you recover from something like this? Because it took a long time to get people vaccinated, right? Have polio go away, have measles go away, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Herd immunity, however you want to say it, if I'm using the right word. But once you lose that, how hard is it to get it back? Because I know in any broadcasting endeavor, once you lose the audience, it's hard to get them back. So is it the same thing here where once you lose that herd immunity, it's hard to get it back?
Yeah, you know, that is the case. And honestly, I cannot answer that question. I can't because I really don't know. It only takes one anti-vaxxer to change thousands of people against vaccines. And it takes 1,000 people talking for vaccines to change one anti-vaxxer back. And that's the hard part.
Follow the science, please. Thank you, Dr. Corey James. Congratulations, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate you, my friend.
You bet. New and hitched up, Dr. Corey James. All right, 720, or A-Bear, rather, not Corey James. 726, time for traffic now, WWL. 746, 14 till 8, joined by WWL Sports Director Steve Geller, who will be at the Treasure Chest Casino this evening with Mike Dettelier. How you doing, Steve Geller?
I am doing fantastic, Tommy. Thanks for having me.
Tell me about the show tonight, real quick.
Our Thursday night weekend kickoff will be at the Treasure Chest Casino. Going to be breaking down all things dealing with the Saints in Seattle, also getting ready for LSU against Southeastern, and that leads you right into Thursday night football. Not a great matchup this evening, but at least it's a divisional showdown. Hopefully Miami can show us something because the Dolphins have been a hurting squad this year. Just, you know, people talk about some of the worst teams in the NFL. They look like one of them, and they're taking on one of the best. And the Buffalo Bills and Josh Allen might be, putting up some spectacular stats for you in fantasy tonight against Miami.
Tell me about the Saints and your thoughts so far.
You know, I will say that I have been pleasantly surprised with what Spencer Rattler's been doing. From what we were seeing in the training camp and preseason, I did not expect him to be performing as well as he has so far. It hasn't been perfect by any means. But he's been, I hate the term game manager, but he's done enough for this team to win. Unfortunately, some elements around him have let them down, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Last game, probably his best performance we've ever seen. You know, 3-touchdown day. His scrambling ability has shown to be a major asset. And, that the offensive line still has some issues in the interior. And then the defensive line, I don't know. That's one of my bigger concerns right now for the squad is the lack of a pass rush and getting pressure on opposing quarterbacks. I don't care who's at the helm. We saw Mac Jones last week having his way with the, you know, passing all over the secondary. And I'm not a huge Sam Darnold fan. He's all right. But if you give him enough time, too, he's going to pick you apart.
When it comes to Chase Young, what do we know about him? How serious is that calf? Because it seemed as though it was billed as a minor thing, but it's turning out not to be that, right?
Nah, it's another, you know, the first injury report of the week came out yesterday. Chase Young still not practicing due to that calf issue. And, yeah, you he's your best guy, your best pass rusher that hasn't been available right off the bat. I know the Cajun Cannon, after seeing him in training camp, was excited, saying he thought he was going to be a double-digit sack guy. Well, right now we're just hoping he can get on the field. We'll see what happens with today's injury report. Maybe he gets upgraded to limited, but head coach Kellen Moore has been very coy with saying anything about the status of Young, just saying he's continuing to rehab and hoping to be back on the field soon. So, I understand they don't want to push that calf issue, so you end up with a more severe issue, and then he's done for the season. But, man, oh, man, definitely a huge piece of this defense that's missing right now.
Do we know what's wrong with his calf or not?
Just a calf, I guess, strain, you would call it, and I guess they're worried about it, you know, developing into something that could be, that, you know, end your season, you end up tearing an Achilles or something.
Tell me about the Seahawks.
Man, Seattle, this is going to be a tough matchup just because, too, your road trip you're taking, which is interesting to me for the Saints after today's workout in Metairie. They're hitting the plane today, Tommy. They're going out to Seattle after today's workout to get acclimated, as Coach Kellen Moore said, to a different time zone. You know, the 2 hours behind over there, it's not really much of a weather, you know, that you have to get acclimated to in Seattle. But the team will be up there, do a little more bonding. The Seahawks squad, they're 1-1 on the year, and definitely a unit on defense that will scare you because their pressure with the D-line that they can put on you. I think they're only allowed 17 points a game so far this season per game, and they got a good secondary, all around a top-tier challenge for Spencer Rattler in his third start this season. And I'm definitely concerned, like I mentioned, with those issues on the interior offensive line for the Saints, that pressure coming up the gut on Sunday at Spence. And man, oh man, at least he's got the scrambling ability, but we're still dealing with issues with Trevor Penning is at least limited now at practice. So that's a positive for them as he's recovering from a toe issue. But another guy that's been filling in for Penning, Dylan Raidins, he popped up as a not practice yesterday. Also with the toe injury, and Taliesi Fuaga, man, the right tackle, he's dealing with a knee issue and now also a back injury. So more concerns on the O-line there has me really worried about facing this Seattle D front.
Now let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to Steve Geller, WWL Sports Director, about the Saints taking on the Seahawks. We'll have all the action for you here on WWL, of course, 751, 9 till 8, traffic, WWL. 7:58, 2 till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Steve Geller, WWL Sports Director. Steve, hopes that the Saints will clean up that low-hanging fruit because, man, twice they had chances to win the game and just didn't.
Yeah, we've seen them kind of hurt themselves in the first two games, whether it's with penalties, missed field goals. Man, I know everybody was raving about Blake Groupe in the training camp, how accurate he's been. That's needed for this squad. We know the offense is a work in progress right now, and if they get into field goal range and are missing these easy ones, that just puts even more pressure on this squad. I'm hoping that they continue their trend of winning their last two they have in Seattle. They're back up there this Sunday. Let's make it three in a row. The Sam Darnold now at the helm for the Seahawks, like I mentioned, doesn't scare me. He had two touchdowns last week, but also two picks. So hopefully this team, they also need to generate more turnovers. There's a lot of musts.
Real quick, we only got a minute left. Who's their guy on defense? Every defense has a guy, right? Who's Seattle's guy on defense?
When you look at this Seahawks squad, you got to think their cornerback, who's a bit banged up right now, in Devin Witherspoon. He can be a big problem and a game changer.
Okay, thank you, Steve. We'll be listening this afternoon from the Treasure Chest Casino when you and Mike Dettelier broadcast live from there starting at 4 o'clock. When we come back, we're going to talk to Susan Bourgeois, Louisiana Economic Development Secretary. Louisiana's launching a number of new initiatives to make things easier for business and to help grow the economy. Governor says he wants things to move at the speed of business, not at the speed of government. Amen to that. We'll find out about it when we come back here on WWL. It is 8:14, and we're joined by Susan Bourgeois, Louisiana Economic Development Secretary, to talk about Project Lightning Speed. Good morning, Susan. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. Thanks for having me this morning.
I like what the governor said about that it's about getting government to move at the speed of business and not the speed of government. Tell me what Project Lightning Speed is.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. That's sort of what we've been saying from day one about how we really have to position Louisiana to win competitively is first and foremost is we need to operate that way. So Project Lightning Speed is really one part of a four-part initiative that we're doing right now. But what that focus is, it's an executive order that the governor issued 2 days ago that basically directs his cabinet to work in conjunction with LED on LED projects and on policies and on activities, if you will, that makes the state and state government responsive to business and their needs, whether it's trying to attract a big project here, support our existing Louisiana businesses, grow our business ecosystem. It really is a directive to make sure that every agency and state government is pulling in the same direction at the same speed, because when business succeeds in Louisiana, you know, Louisiana succeeds.
Tell me what that would look like. For example, and I know the idea is to cut the red tape, but instead of, well, let me check with this agency, let me check with that one, let me check with this one, they'll get back to him, the email will come here before you know it, 6 months have passed, that kind of thing?
Right. Yeah, so what it really came from was a very practical application. We did this when we landed the Meta project. The governor even referenced this in the press conference on Tuesday, that Mark Zuckerberg called him specifically, and Mark said, if other places could do it at the speed and the ease at which Louisiana did it, you know, it would be a very different experience. And so what it meant was that the day we learned that we had this opportunity in North Louisiana for the size and scale of what Meta was looking for, the governor assembled his cabinet and handed out non-disclosure agreements, which, you know, we have to do when we're going through processes like that, had everybody sign it, and then just said, we're all working together and we're all working fast. So as we looked at the site and we needed to make water or air permit determinations, DEQ was alongside us the whole way. DOTD was looking at the state roads that, you know, adjoined the area to see what kinds of capacity issues were going to be there. Every single agency in state government was working at the same speed that LED was working at in that project. And so we used that as the model, because if we can formalize that, right, which we did purely relationally, you know, 18 months ago, but if we could formalize that, that gives Louisiana an advantage that no other southern state has, that ability to do it at that speed.
Rather than, okay, well, they've looked at it, let's get them to look at it. Everybody gets up there one time and looks at it and evaluates it at the same time, pretty much?
Exactly right.
That makes a lot of sense.
We all do it together instead of subsequent, right? Exactly.
And I would think also that, yep, is there any interaction going on that says, well, if this, then that, and the other guy says, well, no, and then the other lady says, well, maybe if that, then this, that kind of thing goes on. I would imagine that would speed the whole thing up, too.
It speeds the whole thing up. So we were doing everything that needed to be done for, you know, any kind of project of those sizes and scales to be, and even policy, right, to really look at funding policies. And if you're just looking at everything through a similar or the same lens, mm-hmm, you just move much, you know, again, you move at the speed of business. The industry would do it. The governor's just saying, all right, now we're going to make sure state government does it as well.
So when it comes to being the Secretary of Louisiana Department of Economic Development, Louisiana Economic Development Secretary, your primary job is what, Susan?
Well, I wish there was one primary sometimes, but actually it's a great problem to have. We call it, it's threefold. Our job is to attract new businesses, to build new businesses, right, find abilities for startups and to build businesses here and to grow the ones that we have. So it's to attract, build, and grow. It's all about building a business ecosystem so that we have, you know, everyone in Louisiana has the chance at ever-growing wages and prosperity, frankly. So we do that through attracting new ones. But, you know, everybody hears about those. Those are the Metas. Those are the Hyundais. Those are the venture globals, right? Those are the big shiny ones, I like to call them. But truth be told, we do just as much work growing existing Louisiana businesses and trying to create a system where people can start businesses here.
When it comes to consolidation like that, that lightning speed, I would imagine that's especially important with existing businesses, too, who have some problems maybe with cash flow or financing, whatever. They need to have an answer pretty quickly. They can't wait 6 or 8 or 9 months or whatever it takes.
Exactly right. You know, it's a great point, is that, you know, so much of what our focus as a department has been on is that we need to support the existing businesses that are here. Just as we want to attract the new ones, we need to make sure all the policies and the incentives and the work that we're doing needs to treat our existing businesses with the same opportunity. And so that time frame, that responsiveness, we've redone, you know, every state has incentives around job growth. That's just a common, right, element to a government when you're trying to do that. We've redone our incentives so that small and mid-sized businesses who are already in Louisiana can participate the same way a new big out-of-state location, you know, someone coming in can. So we're really looking at everything differently, and have been for the last 19, 20 months since the governor took office, to say, how do we just change these systems, right? These state government systems, to be more responsive to and effective for Louisiana businesses.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. Man, when I was in college, Susan, all I wanted to do was be on the radio. Now that I'm on the radio, all I want to do is learn about business. That goes to show you, right? Susan Bourgeois, Louisiana Economic Development Secretary. It fascinates me. It really does. We'll talk about attracting new businesses when we come back, and maybe some success stories if you have them about this project, Lightning Speed. 820 traffic now, WWL. 825, Tommy Tucker, WWL, on his Thursday morning, talking to Susan Bourgeois, Louisiana Economic Development Secretary, about Project Lightning Speed. And if you're just tuning in, it's a great idea, really, by the governor to, instead of having one department go out and check something, then another department, then another department, then another department, if a company's thinking about relocating here or expanding, right, Susan? Everybody gets together at one time and puts eyes on it, and then there's communication that goes on. If one says, well, what if this, that, then maybe that, well, we could always do this. And it just facilitates investment and business, and makes it as business-friendly as can possibly be. Did I phrase that right?
Yeah, perfect, perfect. And it creates efficiencies inside of government, which is all right, as taxpayers, what we want to do. But it also, more importantly, as importantly, you know, produces a product that's just better.
It's what we call winner, winner, chicken dinner. Just kidding. They call it win-win. So let's talk about, I know you said, talked about confidentiality agreements, and I know you can't talk specifically about them, but I presume there are some things in the works that we might be hearing about in the future?
Yeah, there are always things in the works, you know, which is a great, you know, it's part of what I absolutely love about this job, and it's the soapbox I get on all the time, is that the opportunity in Louisiana right now is really, really so much greater than a lot of people realize. And so we are continually doing two things. Number one is we're trying to win those projects, right? So we're working the actual meat of the projects to get expansions, to get relocations, to get the big ones. And simultaneously, we're working really hard to change the perception for Louisiana, right? Making sure that people understand that there is opportunity here. And that's just not for outsiders to come in. That's for people inside of Louisiana to know what the opportunity is from a business perspective, from a training perspective, right? To stay here, to grow here, to make a good living here. So, they're big things. I will say there is no understating the importance of all things energy. And the fact that the future of the world economy is dependent on it, and that's from everything from AI to just pure energy generation for consumption and for consumers and for industrial production. You know, energy is the greatest commodity that we're seeing right now, and Louisiana is so uniquely and beneficially positioned to just take advantage of that from our existing energy assets to obviously, our ability to just the abundant natural gas that we have here and our ability to generate more power. Just I can't underspeak enough for people to understand the opportunity we have in the energy space right now.
And perhaps generate power as well?
Absolutely. You know, Louisiana has a system that's working well in that regard. We have the benefit of watching how some other states have perhaps not done it well, and they're struggling with that now. And Louisiana has the very beneficial and unique position to be in to see how can we not only generate more to relocate more businesses here, but how can we generate power to be a potential grid exporter, right? I mean, energy is an incredible commodity, and how can we do more and more in that space? And a regulatory environment that allows for it is a big benefit there.
Any active discussions of new nuclear plants, or is that anything you can talk about?
Well, you know, not a specific plant, but the governor has been very vocal about his opinion that nuclear is a smart opportunity for energy generation. He started a task force recently with members of his cabinet and others to look at Louisiana's opportunity in all things nuclear and develop an aggressive strategy around it. I think you will continue to hear about nuclear opportunities in Louisiana and how we can participate in the expansion of that, not just here in the U.S. domestic market, but across the globe.
One thing I'm intrigued by, this story from NOLA.com by Ian Salvosa quotes the governor saying when you and he went to the, and I guess some more people went to the Paris Air Show, it isn't a listening tour, we've listened, this is an action tour. Tell me what that means.
Yeah, well, he was talking about one of the other initiatives we launched 2 days ago is that I and our whole leadership team from LED have committed to doing 800 visits in the next 6 months or so of Louisiana businesses to go in and to tell them what we have to offer and to tell them what action we either have or can take on their behalf. You know, just touching Louisiana businesses and making sure that they hear everything that the state has to offer them to build, to grow, to expand. And so, you know, we've heard it. We've spent 20 months listening to the kinds of things that they need. We're always open to more input, and we're also now taking the step to make sure we're sitting across their desk saying, we're from the state and we're here to help, right, which is not something that you hear very often in government.
But you mean it this time.
That's the action that we're taking. We mean it. And
you mean it this time, yes.
One of the things I like is I mean it, and we're putting out the numbers so people hold us accountable to us. So that has begun, and just watch us. I can't wait to report to everybody on how those numbers are hitting, that we are in the offices of 800 Louisiana businesses saying, what can we do for you?
Thank you, Secretary Bourgeois. You're welcome anytime you want to come on. Susan Bourgeois, Louisiana Economic Development Secretary. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Tommy. Appreciate it.
All right. You bet. We'll take a break. Come back. Talk to Ronald Surpass about the National Guard and crime. Minute late. Time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. Well, about 157 pounds of fun, actually. 8:45, quarter till 9. Tommy Tucker joined by Ronald Surpass, our friend, professor, practicing Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD superintendent, head of the Washington State Police, Nashville City Police, consulted to numerous departments. You'll see him on TV every now and then pop up as he gives his opinion on this or that. And we welcome him in now as our friend. How you doing, Ronald?
Tommy, I'm wonderful. How are you?
I would be somewhere between fantastic and fabulous. I would say fantabulous.
Yeah, but you're not Ducky or Skippy.
No. Well, no. Not well, yeah, I'd say Ducky. You can call me Ducky if you like. I say Ducky. Tell me about, first of all, you know, I always talk to you about perception and reality, and I see this Fox 8 poll that says that voters now, crime is not their top concern. So I'm still trying to figure out where crime is in New Orleans. If it is, because I heard you on the news, our own news 2 days ago saying that, and it was funny because, or not funny, but ironic because they had a story about a brother that ran another brother over in a road rage incident, two teenagers in Arizona, I think it was. And I thought about Cain and Abel, and you talked about the Bible, and people have been killing each other going way back when, and I put those two together, and there's no way to eliminate crime completely, totally, ever, right? I mean, that's just human nature. There are people that are going to hurt people. There are people that are going to get fired up in relationships and kill people. There are people that are going to steal things.
Well, that's exactly right. And what we were talking about in the Fox 8 poll, you know, it's great. It's another poll. And I believe in the polls if they're done methodologically sound, and I'm sure the Fox 8 is. But sometimes it depends on what the question is compared to other questions and what's being asked and how the question's written. But what we know from the New Orleans Crime Coalition, which has been doing this for 10 years independently of the government, is that in the city of New Orleans this summer, 6% of the people felt very safe. 48% felt fairly safe. 29, not that safe at all. And 15, not that safe. What that tells you is 54% of the people have a somewhat positive to positive view of safety in New Orleans, but 46% don't. And that's what a police chief, and at least I thought I always focused on. Of course, we talked about the uniform crime data, but you and I have mentioned before, the uniform crime reports from the FBI is only one part of the story, and it's nowhere more than half of what the story is. So when people are asked to say, am I safe in my neighborhood? Am my family safe in my neighborhood? Can I go into other neighborhoods? That's what really drives this ultimate question. Does the city feel safe? And B, I agree. I mean, in Nashville, I'm very proud of our time in Nashville. We polled the public independently every 6 months for 5 years. Our overall satisfaction never fell below 70% of the value of service that we provided there. But we never got more than 25% that ever felt totally safe in the community. So that was the magic number. What part of this community can we do a different job in?
But Chief, so, yeah, I would also let me just jump in for a second because mm-hmm. I would have to guess that some of those people that answer that question don't walk around the city, don't go from neighborhood to neighborhood, that they just sit there and they watch the TV and they get frightened and afraid from what they see. If it bleeds, it leads on TV, and maybe that affects their opinion, or am I making stuff up?
Well, no, you're actually very close to what the research tells us. There's a company called Pew Research. They're very well respected. They're thought to be bipartisan, like they're down the road. Here's mm-hmm. what they tell us. In the United States of America, you caricaturize crime. 72% of Americans base that on what their friends, family, and neighbors tell them. About 70% base it on what local news tells them. So you're right. I think you're right there, but the other one mm-hmm. is equally as important. And guess what? They don't trust politicians. Mm-hmm. The local public, you know, this is what Pew says. They don't really trust political leaders to discuss crime because the public can see through that one party or one part or one, you know, one part wants to say it's bad for whatever their reasons are. The other part wants to say it's good. So bottom line, count on how the people learn about crime, and it's their friends, families, and neighbors, period, the end. That is the highest draw of their attention, and it's been like that for my entire career, by the way.
And the political
I mean,
part.
I was chief when crime was going down, we thought, and people thought it was going up, and you can't change their mind just because you say it.
Right. The political part of it is either I'm going to create a situation that doesn't exist that I'll save you from, or I have saved you from a condition that existed. Either way, the people are suspect. Let me pick it up here. We're going back 8:51, 9 till 9. We'll talk about the National Guard specifically, and President Trump and Governor Landry, and are they needed or not, or will they make a difference? Traffic now, WWL. 8:57, 3 till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to our friend Ronald Zerpass about law and policing and National Guardsmen. They're not commissioned law enforcement officers. They don't have the authority to make arrests. The president thinks that the president's going to be the presence of the National Guard would be a visual deterrent to criminals. And Chief, just yesterday I was talking to a friend, and on my timeline on the phone came up pictures of the Sugar Bowl after the attack and all of the presence that was on Poitras Street. And I never have felt safer. But I don't know if that's possible to do every day, and if that's where the real crime is occurring. Tell me your thoughts on that. You've studied this for your life's work.
Well, you know, the people in New Orleans are very used to seeing the National Guard here. Super Bowls, sometimes the Big Sugar mm-hmm. Bowls, sometimes New Year's Eve, so it's not uncommon. The governor of New Mexico, who's a Democrat, called up the National Guard to assist local law enforcement in 2025 in April to help with traffic control, securing crime scenes, visibility. Very common, not enforce the law. In 2024, the Democratic governor of Illinois called up Guard to help the local police with the Republican convention, I mean, with the Democratic convention. Mm-hmm. And the Democratic governor of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, called up the National Guard to help for the convention. The question isn't that the Guard does not provide assistance. They provide assistance with traffic control, point control, helping deliver food products after disasters. It's become a totally politicized thing because there are examples of Democratic and Republican governors over my entire lifetime who have used the Guard for either planned major events or spontaneous disasters to relieve the police of some of these positions of control, position control, traffic control, so the police can go do crime fighting and peacekeeping. Mm-hmm. So it's really become a tremendously over-politicized issue because even the people who are complaining the most right now as we speak about the National Guard going to cities, provided they're not doing police work, arresting people, they themselves have done it in the last year several times.
There's no special event or natural disaster, I guess, in New Orleans. So I'm asking you, would they be of help here now?
If they provide assistance to a department that only has 900 people when it should have 12 or 1600 and those protected officers, those guardsmen are not enforcing the law, but maybe they're doing crowd control or traffic control or being a visible deterrent, and the police are freed up to go do more of the police work? Absolutely. Absolutely. It's been done hundreds of times in my career.
All right. We are joined now by Martha Cagle, Executive Director of Unity of Greater New Orleans. Get an update on the fight against homelessness in the New Orleans area, the Greater New Orleans area. Good morning, Martha. How are you?
Fine. How are you, Tommy?
I am okay. Tell me about Unity of Greater New Orleans to begin with and what it is that you guys do and how you go about doing it.
Well, Unity has been around since the early 1990s, and we were founded by several nuns and a lot of people who came together to work on the issue, which was then a fairly new issue of homelessness in our community. And over the years, we have been very successful at getting government grants and housing a lot of vulnerable people. So what's really exciting right now is that our collaborative of about 50 nonprofit and governmental agencies have partnered with the City of New Orleans and the State of Louisiana on a goal of housing 1,500 adults who were living on the street or in emergency shelter in their own apartments with case management services by December 31st of this year. And as of right now, we have housed 1,326
out of 1,500 people. 1,500. That's amazing. So tell me where do these apartments come from, Martha, and how are they paid for?
Well, we mostly get governmental grants of primarily from the federal government. The city has put up some money as well. We have businesses and foundations that also are providing funding. We have donations from individuals that are providing funding. Our federal grants do require a 25% match from individual donors or foundations. So, you know, it's really a community-wide effort. And in our community, I would say the majority of the apartments are mom-and-pop apartments. You know, we have landlords all over the community. We cover both Orleans and Jefferson, and we have small landlords all over the community that are working with us. We also have, you know, some landlords with larger complexes that work with us as well. We try not to concentrate people in any one location.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
be an artist,
be an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at brag-worthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
Big moments or small moments, they all deserve great style. At Maurice's, we're here to help you show up feeling your best, no matter what's on your calendar. Whether it's a date night, a special event, or just another Tuesday. Our over 800 stylists are here to help. From tried and true denim to head-turning looks, we've got style that fits your life and your budget. Visit your local Maurice's to find fashion fit for you with a little help from us.
Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky, but Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 45% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
you know, basically house people where they want to be housed. And most of the people who experience homelessness in our community are from our community, and they typically want to go back to the neighborhoods that they grew up in.
When it comes to case studies, if you will, Martha, I think it might be good. I don't want you to violate anybody's confidence or anything, although I do see a story about Ms. Zonia on your website. Give me some success stories, if you will, of how people that were homeless, if you can, how they got to be homeless, how getting them into an apartment turned their life around, and then I guess they are able to sustain themselves in the apartment. Do they stay in the apartments forever? How does that work?
One of my favorite stories, because it was just so dramatic, was a 68-year-old woman who was sleeping outside for many years after Katrina in the parking lot of a fast food restaurant uptown. And she was one of our rare clients who actually refused help. Mm-hmm. Most people are desperate for housing, but this particular woman had paranoid schizophrenia, and she was very paranoid. And when our outreach team would approach her, she would just cuss them out. And you know, she was elderly. Her health was not good. We were very concerned about her. And at the time, we were opening an apartment building that we had developed with a local developer, HRI, on Tulane Avenue, and it had a former hotel, and it had a beautiful open courtyard, and we showed her a picture of it, and our outreach team didn't really hold out much hope that she would go for it, but she jumped in the back of the van. It was the last apartment we had available. That very day, we were holding a ceremony to, dedicate the building. And she was so mentally ill that even though it was June 22nd in New Orleans, she was wearing a fake fur coat. Mm. She always wore a heavy coat. And we offered her food from the reception on a plate. She wouldn't eat it. Instead, she ate, food droppings on the concrete floor. And, you know, she was very, very ill. And that was a Friday. The following Tuesday, I came to the building, and this woman had been totally transformed just by being housed for 3 days. She had gone through a box of donated clothing with her case manager, and she had picked out this woman who never wore anything but a heavy coat, no matter what, how hot it was. She had picked out a sleeveless cotton floral sundress, and she was wearing it. She was clean. Her hair was clean. She had a smile on her face. And I couldn't help it. I just started crying.
Had she gotten the medical attention that she needed as well?
She had not at that point gotten
really
seen by, it takes a while to get an appointment with a mm-hmm. psychiatrist. This was simply, even though she was still very mentally ill, this was simply from having housing, having a case manager, having people who cared about her, and she managed to, live successfully in the building for about 10 years until she passed away of natural causes. She was successfully housed. We did get her to the doctor. We did get her to the psychiatrist. Her situation improved greatly. But that was one of the most dramatic instances where and we have seen similar things where people who look almost like they're subhuman because they've been living on the street for so long and they're so dirty and bedraggled are just, you see them a couple days after their house and, they've had a good night's sleep for several nights and they've got clean clothes and their, hair is washed and they look just like you and me.
Is there, are there common paths toward homelessness that you can identify?
Well, the major thing, you know, you have to really look at this on a macro level.
Right.
The major thing that has been proven to cause homelessness, a high rate of homelessness, is the shortage of affordable rental housing. But there are individual characteristics that make one more inclined to fall into homelessness. So it's like a tragic game of musical chairs. If there are chairs removed from the room, that being a stand-in for affordable apartments, who is going to not get a chair in this tragic game of musical chairs? It's going to be people with disabilities. It's going to be people who are not politically connected. It's going to be people who are discriminated against, people who are victims of domestic violence. You know, we do find high rates of disability among people with who are experiencing homelessness, they are definitely very overrepresented. But the good news is that, you know, there has been, you know, a lot of consensus about what causes homelessness and what works to end it. I would recommend to anybody listening to look up a report from the Bipartisan Policy Center, and then Google the word homelessness with that, and you will find a report that, you know, just lays out very clearly the causes and solutions to homelessness that Republicans and Democrats agree on. And the good news is that it's cost effective. Providing housing and services is cost effective, and it works for at least 90% of the people experiencing homelessness. In our community, our rates are more like 95% success rate. So, you know, we just need, you know, more resources. And, you know, unfortunately, what is really driving this persistent problem of homelessness is just the fact that we have a widening gap between the rich and the poor, and we have a acute shortage of affordable rental housing. The cost of rent has gone way up in the New Orleans area. Fair market rent for a one-bedroom apartment is $1,236 a month, $1,236 a month. That is the fair market rent. There are rents much higher than that. But many people in our community only make minimum wage, which is only $7.25 an hour, or they make slightly above that. $8 an hour is a very common wage. And there is just no way that if you are making minimum wage, and the minimum wage, by the way, has not been raised in 16 years. Inequality has been growing. And New Orleans, by some measures, now has the biggest wealth gap of any major city in the country. So, you know, we all understand what our ethical duty is. You know, no matter what religion we are or what ethical system we have, you know, we all learn the basic things. Love thy neighbor. Whatsoever ye do to the least of these, my brethren, ye do it unto me. In the Talmud, the Jewish faith believes strongly if you save one life, you save the world. Every major religion has the same basic principles. And, you know, we all just got to, you know, take care of the most vulnerable people in our community. And there's something for everybody to do. You know, when we house people, one thing our government grants do not pay for is any of the furnishings and household goods that people need who have nothing. And so what we do to spread our funds as far as they can go, because there's never enough money, is to ask everybody to go to your linen closet, to go to your kitchen cupboard, and pick out some things that are gently used that that you don't need. And other people who have nothing desperately need, and donate that to our warehouse. And you can contact our warehouse by going to our website at unitygno.org. You can also make a financial donation there to cover the 25% match that we need for our federal grants that pay for the rent assistance and case management. And, you know, even if it's $5, it's going to be tremendously helpful. I find it really moving. We sometimes get donations of a dollar bill, and you can tell from the handwriting that it's an elderly person, and this might be the, you know, literally all they can afford to give. But we find that people in New Orleans are so caring, and they are just so loving and giving, and people really care about this issue. And, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're Republican or Democrat. It doesn't matter if you're conservative or liberal. It doesn't matter what your religion is. We all know that we need to do the right thing and take care of our most vulnerable people. And it's just a great cause to work on. And I'm just so honored to be part of it. I had a sister with mental illness living in Maryland, and you know, she would have been homeless if it weren't for our family support. So this issue is, you know, really personal for me.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. I'm getting some text. Some people want to know about the plans to get people out of the temporary housing, or is it temporary when you get them into the apartments? The other question says, is getting homeless people into apartments making the housing crisis worse? You can address that. And some other questions coming in as well from Martha Cagle, Executive Director of Unity of Greater New Orleans. They have had a goal of housing 1,500 people. They have, so far this year, housed 1,326. I got that right, Martha?
Well, it's been since September of 2023 is when we
September
started.
September 23, okay. So, well on the road, good progress being made. We'll pick it up. We come back talking about homelessness in the greater New Orleans area. Tommy Tucker back in a flash, WWL. 9:30, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Martha Cagle, Executive Director of Unity of Greater New Orleans. Martha, tell me what happens once you do house a homeless person in an apartment. Is the plan for them to stay there for 10 years? Is the plan to get them back on their feet and productive? Is it about, depending on their age or their health, et cetera? Tell me what the plans are.
Well, we really assess everybody initially to see if they have serious disabilities, whether or not they meet the criteria for what we call permanent supportive housing, which would be housing where the rent assistance would be provided as long as they need it. And so there are many people in our community who, because of being elderly, because of having schizophrenia, because of having, you know, other very significant disabilities where they can't work, do need affordable rental assistance on an ongoing basis, along with case management services. There are other people, though, that we only provide rent assistance for a short time. It could be a few months, it could be a year, but our case managers in those cases are working hard on helping that person increase their income, get better job, get training, maybe find a roommate, do things that will allow them to be able to maintain housing on their own after the period of rent assistance ends. So we do not do a one-size-fits-all approach. Mm-hmm. We really look at each individual, and we keep assessing and reassessing them. Because sometimes, you know, people with even significant disabilities can recover and, you know, become employed. So we're always looking to help person achieve their highest level of functioning. And sometimes that means reuniting with family who can help take care of them. You know, we're looking at all the different approaches, always trying to stretch our money as far as it can go because there's such a shortage.
Stretch the money as far as it can go. And as it relates to housing, you probably have people waiting to get into the housing where some of your clients are now, so it's incumbent upon you, and you feel a responsibility to get people to self-sustain, if they can, as quickly as they can, so that the housing that you do have will open up for those waiting that are homeless now. Accurate?
Exactly, exactly. Okay. And sometimes we find that, you know, we're able to stabilize a person so that they don't need the supportive services, but they still need the rent assistance. Mm-hmm. So we have partnerships with housing authorities where we might move them to a voucher that doesn't have case management services for somebody who has become very stable and no longer needs those services. And then we can open up a slot for somebody who is like the woman I described earlier, you know, with schizophrenia, who really needs the services as well. You know, years ago, many people with severe mental illness would have been locked up in institutions for life. That was a very, very expensive approach, and it was also unnecessary in many cases, because people can recover and can live independently in the community with some support.
Manage it with medication, right?
Yeah, things can be managed with medication. We spend a lot of time making sure that our clients are going to the doctor, getting the care they need, getting substance use treatment, really working on motivating. You know, we're doing trainings right now, and we, you know, are always doing this to try to help our case managers be as effective as possible in motivating our clients to do everything they can to live their best life. And oftentimes, you know, there are substance use problems, and people do need help with that. And, you know, we're trying to be as effective as we can be in helping people be as independent as possible and, yeah, free up the slot for somebody else.
Thank you, Martha. I appreciate your time, as always, and your efforts. We'll take a break. Martha Kuchel, Executive Director of Unity of Greater New Orleans. We'll take a break. We come back. We're going to talk to our friend Andrew Schwartz, tech expert, about the attack on the Orleans Parish Sheriff's Office, ongoing ransomware attack. He's a professor of ITT in the EJ USO, which is how it's pronounced, College of Business at LSU. 9:35, traffic now, WWL. 9:42, closing in on 10 o'clock. Andrew Schwartz joins us, professor of IT in the E.J. Uso College of Business at LSU, been researching technology-related issues for over 20 years. How you doing, professor?
Fantastic. How are you this morning?
I'm okay. Now, to be clear, this has something to do with the computer, right?
It always does, right?
Yeah, it does. It always has something to do with the computer. Let's talk about what's going on with the hack at the sheriff's, the ransomware attack, not a hack. Or is it a hack? I don't know. Let's get our definition straight here. What happened at the sheriff's office, the Orleans Parish Sheriff's Office?
Yeah, so here's what we know so far. So what we know so far is that the sheriff's office was attacked with a ransomware attack. So a ransomware attack is where essentially a group of hackers logs in to your technology systems and they download data that you have in your corporate systems. They then hold that data hostage or for ransom until you agree to pay them so they don't release that information out.
So do they steal it, or do they just keep you from accessing it, or both?
It was actually it was stolen. So typically the way that a ransomware type of attack such as this happens is, think about, you know, if you check your email and you get an email from an unknown person and it has maybe an invoice or a link and you click on that. Well, when you do that, it's called a phishing attack. When you do that, the perpetrators have get access into the network, so as if they were you.
So don't click on any email. Boy, well, how would you go about that? You know, in a business environment, I get yelled at sometimes because I don't answer emails because I'm terrified to click on anything. What would you tell a business owner to tell their employees when it comes to this? First of all, is it just governments that are targeted? Is it larger corporations? Do they go after mom and pops, or do they just send out software out there or whatever it is looking for vulnerable spots? Are they constantly probing?
Oh, they're absolutely constantly probing. The early indications from this particular attack, from what they say so far, is that the fingerprints are pointing to a Russian group that are doing it. Again, this is not definite yet, but these are some early signs. So if you're a small business owner, the estimate is around 60% of companies at some point are victims of this type of attack. The problem is that most companies don't go public with this information because they don't want to know that they were victims of this attack. It points them a radar, a bullseye on their back that looks like they could be attacked again. But even as a researcher myself that does this kind of work and that studies why and how people respond to these types of attacks, I must admit myself, I was almost fell victim to one a couple of years ago as well.
Really?
I received an email from my boss, and it said, I'm in a meeting right now, but we need to buy gift cards for some students. Could you go out and use your corporate credit card and just buy some gift cards for Amazon? That seemed reasonable. So I was on the way out the door, and I started to think, well, why did he email that? Mm-hmm. So I followed up back and forth, and the ransomware person actually not only knew my name and my boss's name, but it knew my boss's boss's name. It knew where I worked. It knew where my office was. So it seemed like this was a good idea. So I texted my boss, and he said, no, my email got hacked. So they had commandeered his email and were sending these types of attacks. And what they wanted us to do was to go buy gift cards and then email them the gift card numbers. So basically they were going to take the university's money to buy gift cards, and then they were going to have Amazon gift cards that they could sell on the black market.
Is it only a matter of time until everybody or every organization eventually is hit by a ransomware attack?
Unfortunately, while not ransomware, almost every company will be victim to some type of attack. If you even look at all the big companies at some level have and will continue to be. It's kind of, unfortunately, it's what the price of doing business today. So companies are looking at alternative ways to think about that. So if you even think about it, there's actually ransomware insurance, for example, that you can buy so that they'll come in and help you to become less likely to become victim of this attack. Because just like in a normal ransom situation, one of the issues that you have to deal with is, do I pay them off or do I not? And that's a very complicated question to answer.
One thing that always terrifies me about this kind of thing is, okay, you get attacked, you get hacked, or maybe you're subject to ransomware if you own a company. Who do you call? Because you have no idea. In this case, they think it's Quillen or whatever it is out of Russia, but who do you call? 911, they're not going to help you. What do you do?
No, your actual call is actually to the local FBI office. They have experts in this area in particular. So I was just actually at headquarters there a couple of weeks ago and talking with them, and they have a whole unit propped up specifically around ransomware and cyber attacks, and that's where their expertise lies.
So can they actually – they can't affect an arrest in Russia or wherever this is coming from? And first of all, do we know if it always comes from Russia? How sophisticated does an operation have to be to send out this probing, I guess, software or emails or whatever it is?
The sad part is that the amount of technological sophistication is not that high. And there's a lot of concerns. I know you and I have talked over time about AI a lot. And there's actually, this is where the intersection of these two kind of trends comes to be interesting, because there's some concern around the cybersecurity community that AI is going to be used to design future attacks that are similar to this. That may be able to even outsmart us as we think through these issues. So, but on the counter side, I can also tell you one exciting bit, which is that AI is increasingly being used to fight these types of attacks. So the current estimates right now, all these phishing attacks are, of course, important. But Tulane specifically, within the backyard there, they estimate about 50% of all the emails that come into Tulane are spam emails that are designed to do phishing. So there's a significant amount of these emails that get filtered out already before they even hit our inbox.
So what would you tell an organization to tell its employees?
Cyber education, I would tell them the following. First, cyber education is crucial. You need to understand, look for the marks of what is going to be an email that you should or shouldn't open and should respond to, and start to look for that information, and that's where cyber training comes in. The second is really need to think through cybersecurity and think through what that looks like. So, for example, we actually, through LSU, if you're a small business owner, we actually have a cybersecurity team of students who come out and actually look at your company and engage in what's called penetration testing, which is we'll actually look for vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. So the students get a chance to kind of play, try cybersecurity approaches, and you get a profile of how to improve your cybersecurity. So education, work with consultants to think about pen testing. And then just really look at your processes around, sources of potential vulnerabilities. Think about where the vulnerabilities may be on your network. And here's the problem. From an IT person, all they see is risk. So you have to balance out risk versus what's practical for you to be able to maintain your organizational viability as well.
So when it comes to AI, correct me if I'm wrong, but that is all about, and I'm going to make a layman's reference here, movie War Games. You remember that?
Absolutely, yeah.
Where they're trying to find the codes, right, to launch. AI is all about crunching those numbers and going through those probabilities as quickly as possible. Is it accurate or not? Am I close to anything here?
You are close, but actually the biggest source of risk actually for most companies today isn't actually the technology itself. It's actually people. People are the biggest source of risk. Because it's people that engage in behaviors like clicking on an email, or have you ever had your phone logged into your corporate email and lost your phone somewhere? Huge vulnerability risk. So it really it's the people and education that is the biggest source of risk that that companies need to deal with.
Since you said that, I lost my phone at Walmart on Christmas Eve 2 years ago. I'm still waiting for the other shoe to drop on that. I'm hoping it was locked. How concerned should somebody be about that if they lose an iPhone and it's locked? Can people get into it and get all your information out of there or not?
Oh, you should absolutely be concerned, and I don't want to downplay that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Professor. I appreciate that.
Look, I'll be honest. My wife and I just got back from a road trip. We drove back from D.C., and so we stopped one night in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And we left the hotel the next day. A half hour later, she turned to me and said, "I just left my Apple Watch at the phone behind at the hotel." So we disabled it.
And you said, "That's okay, darling," right?
Absolutely. Then we went about the process of disabling it and unlinking it from our account. So there are steps that you can take. But really, at the personal level, if you don't have it, I would really strongly encourage everyone to engage in things like identity monitoring, watching your identity, financial monitoring as well. And there's a lot of companies that'll now increasingly look for your information on the dark web and look for if your information gets released. So there's a lot of tools out there that can help you to monitor yourself as well. And I really encourage people. So at a personal level, I have all that monitoring situation, all that monitoring turned on as well. So I know when my personal information shows up where it shouldn't be.
How has AI changed in the last 6 months? Where's it going to be in 6 months from now? Is it exponentially changing?
So we're kind of in an interesting point. So if you've been following the work of the Gartner Group, really over the last 2 months, what we've seen is that we've hit the trough of disillusionment for AI specifically. And MIT released a study that said only about 50% of companies are seeing the demonstrable ROI from AI. Hmm. So over the last six months, what we started to see is a really hard pivot towards trying to really incorporate AI into corporate infrastructure. And what's interesting about it is what we're finding is that you and I have talked a lot about how AI systems learn by the data that they're provided. Mm-hmm. Well, the data that's provided, as you and I talked about before, was really consumer facing. Well, when companies are trying to put in corporate data into systems that were trained on consumer data, they're finding that there's a mismatch. And a lot of times AI is not delivering upon what they think is the promise of what it could deliver on. So what we're seeing in the last 6 months, we're continuing to see is companies, as they embrace AI, are starting to create their own versions of AI. And so I think we're going to continue to see that from a corporate perspective, more of an incorporation of their own personal data.
What is the best application for AI right now?
That's a good question. I can tell you what the trends of what we're seeing. So if we looked in 2024, we saw a lot of use of AI for brainstorming and for really to help with summaries of emails and that kind of stuff. What we're increasingly seeing in 2025, though, is a move toward incorporating AI to more complex types of tasks. So, for example, OpenAI released a new agent model that's going to enable you to basically do things on your behalf for you using AI. And I think that's going to be really exciting as we move forward.
Cut the grass?
There's a robot for that, as a matter of fact.
There is, as a matter of fact. That's right. Yeah, I was talking to a guy the other day. Had one. Thank you, Andrew. I appreciate your time, as always. Andrew Schwartz, professor of IT in the E.J. Uso College of Business at LSU. Been researching technology-related issues for over 20 years. He is our go-to tech expert. We'll take a break. Come back. Find out what Newell's got planned for us today here on WWL.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well,
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 45% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.